Rome is a city that is historically on most people's hit list when making a trip to Europe. It's more than just a historical destination, but a food-filled city that any foodist will love to eat their way through. In this episode, we talk all about the amazing dishes that you absolutely have to try there, and really the culturally significant and unique aspects of Rome, in which most people may not be expecting. It's a city that requires your adaptability and your flexibility in order to earn the city's respect. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Nomadic Foodist Show. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. I'm very happy to have Shelley Ruel on the show today, where we talk about Rome. The food is so delicious, and I'm really happy that we were able to discuss some of the nuances, the quirks, if you may, of the city, because I didn't have the best experience in Rome when I started traveling a little bit ago, and it was disappointing. I came in with my own expectations of a romantic city that is full of historical landmarks and ruins, and I'll be eating all this delicious pasta with no issues whatsoever. And unfortunately, I was faced with a harsh reality. Again, this is when I first started traveling, so my expectations just weren't there. I should have came in open-minded and understanding that cities function differently, and all of them are different all throughout Europe and all around the world, and how they decide to have their own culture and how the food systems work and how the transportation system works and everything else in between. So I have some of my own personal questions answered here. And Shelley is just so knowledgeable about the food, and that's what I'm so excited about. There are so many different things that you can try, and the pasta selection can be just so overwhelming. And I want people to try the best pasta, and I want people to experience the right pasta dishes too. I think of American Italian dishes to be very different than what the real pasta that you would get in Rome and most parts of Italy. Now, I'm not saying that Italian American pasta and cuisine is not delicious, because it absolutely is, especially if you're in the right pockets all around the United States, like I've had such a great privilege of eating and trying. But this is different. The pasta can be very, very delicious. Al dente even has the correct meaning, I think, over in Italy compared to what we have in other parts of the world. So we dive into those nitty-gritty details about what to expect from the food and the cultural aspects of the city. So here is my interview with Shelley Ruel. Shelley, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And we're really excited to talk about a whole bunch of delicious food. But let's go ahead and get started with the introduction. So please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk today about everything I know and have experienced here in Rome in terms of food and culture over the past 20 years. So as I mentioned, I've been here for 20 years. I came in 2001 just to study the Italian language and fell in love with Rome. And ever since then, I have been living here. I moved back to the States for just a few months to save up some money. And then I came back and I ended up staying. I ended up teaching English for a couple of years. And then I transitioned into some career path jobs here in Rome. So I have a pretty varied history. I was formerly the director of the study center for the University of California here in Rome when they opened their study center. I've also worked with the American Institute for Roman Culture, so working with study abroad students coming over to work in archaeology. Currently, I am working with a company called ItaliaPass, where we just launched a community of expert advice for travelers to Italy. So that's my latest job right now, but I also work for ANSA, which is the national newswire. I translate Italian news into English for their English website. So I have had my hands in a lot of different things here in terms of working with tourists, working with students, but I'm also quite integrated into the local culture.
Oh, good. I'm just curious, How tough is the Italian language?
You know, I think it's funny because Italians will tell you it's really hard. They will say to you, how did you learn so well? They'll say, you speak Italian better than some of the Italians that we've met. And I think you have to have a passion for it, really. I think that's the thing. I loved the way it sounded. I thought it sounded very melodic. And in fact, that's built into the language. I learned that Italian, because it all the words basically end on a vowel sound, it kind of flows like a song.
Yeah.
And I just love the way it sounded. So I think if you love it, like with anything, you're gonna eventually overcome the difficulties. But I think being here is one of the keys, like with any language. You know, you have to kind of sink or swim the first few months or weeks in order to learn.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the immersion is absolutely essential. I just think it's one of the most beautiful languages out there, just how it sounds, the cadence and everything. And I guess, are the hand gestures necessary for talking? Because I've seen it.
Oh, that's such a good question. Yes. Oh, they so are. In fact, it's funny. Now when I talk with my American friends, because I'm from the United States, they'll say to me, your English now sounds like you come from Italy and you cannot talk without using your hands.
Oh, man.
So we do. You can have whole conversations just using our hand gestures here. There's different ones for when you're driving, different ones for when you're on the road, different ones for when you're, you know, talking with your friends. But yeah, no, there's a few fun hand gestures just for, they're very expressive, the Italians.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I've heard a few things. I've seen people in Italy myself. And I was just curious, is that like really the thing? And it's funny to hear that it has a unique place in the language for sure. So what was like the moment or time frame even that you really fell in love with Italy and just like, I have to be there. This is going to be part of my life forever. Like an aha kind of moment.
Well, I had kind of fallen in love with the culture when I was studying Italian. I studied Italian my last year of university, and then I continued after I graduated as a hobby after work for about 2 years. And so I fell in love with the language first off. And of course, when you study the language, you study the culture. When I came to Italy, my first time out of the United States going across the Atlantic, I'd been to Canada and Mexico. I'd never been to Europe. I'd never been abroad per se, out of North America. And I came by myself to study Italian for 1 month. And it just so happened that the very day I arrived was the day after the Rome soccer team had won the national championship for the first time in 20 years.
Oh, no, but that was crazy.
It was unbelievable. So here I am, a wide-eyed 24-year-old who's never been abroad. And remember, this is 2001, so we're pre-internet, basically. I mean, we didn't have a lot of the tools. You still had to use a payphone. We were just into cell phones. We were using, I mean, it makes me feel like a dinosaur. But no, you had to use like, you know, Lonely Planet book. You'd like highlight. Maps were like paper maps to get around. You'd be like unfolding your giant size Rome city map, yeah. Like tracking your journey on the subway. So it was an adventure. It was definitely acquired skills that I think nowadays we take for granted, you know, because our devices do those things for us. But that being said, it was, you know, already overwhelming from all those points of view. And then I get plopped down into Rome and I have no context for what's happening. The just jubilation in this city when there's two soccer teams in Rome. There's Roma and Lazio, and they're bitter rivals. Lazio had won the national championship the year before. So Rome had just won. So I plopped down into the city, and everywhere you go, restaurants, you'd walk into a restaurant and they would burst into song, clapping and singing. There was like a theme song for having won. And everywhere I would go, they'd be clapping, screaming, singing. They were driving down the street with giant flags on the motorini, on the scooters. It was just out of control. And so here was my introduction to the city of Rome. And I fell in love. I mean, the food is a big part of it, but just the excitement and the sense of, I don't know, it was just a very unique moment in time. And sadly, neither Rome nor Lazio has won that championship since, but they desperately keep trying. But, you know, I think that is something that I still to this day tell Romans when they say, when did you come? And if I comment. It was the day after. They call it the Scudetto because it means the little coat of arms, like the shield, like when they take home their championship. That's the word that they use. And when I tell people that was the day I arrived, was the Monday after that Sunday, because the soccer matches are on Sunday here. Everyone, either they side with it, either they get stars in their eyes because they're Rome fans, or they get like the bitter rage face because they're Lazio fans. Oh. They don't want to remember that year. It's kind of like the New York Mets and the Yankees, the kind of the rivalry that happens there. So I think that's what I fell in love with Rome from just a cultural perspective. Of course, the food is a whole nother story. I've had several experiences both in people's homes when they're serving their, like they want to make the great impression on you at home. And so there's just this overabundance of food. And then of course in the restaurants as well. So we can get into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we can dive in now to the food part, because I'm really excited. I went to Rome a few years back, and I have to admit, it wasn't my favorite trip. It wasn't quite what I was expecting. So maybe I need to pay a visit again and give it another
shot. Interesting. Yeah. I'd be curious to hear, what were you expecting and how did it differ?
Well, it was a bit more, I'm trying to think now, a bit more rundown than I thought. Where we were, I can't remember.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of trash on the streets. Maybe I was in the wrong part of town, and like there's like piles of garbage on the streets, and there was like the food was actually very, very good. So I wasn't disappointed in the food at all, but some of the people weren't really nice to me, my wife, and like we actually were traveling with another friend too. And so I'm not sure what I did wrong, maybe.
I don't think you did anything wrong. I think Rome can be very charming. I think it can also be a very difficult city. And unfortunately, what you mentioned about the garbage on the streets, that is an issue here. I don't know how bad it is necessarily downtown where most of the tourists would be, but in the residential neighborhoods, it's a problem. There's a lot of bureaucratic and logistical problems in Rome. It's a real shame because it takes away from the joy of experiencing the city. One other thing about feeling maybe people weren't quite as hospitable. I have run into that consistently in Rome in terms of customer service. It doesn't really, you can have amazing experiences with really, you can just find these really nice places, but you can also run into that, you know, the merchant who's just not, they don't, there's just no sense necessarily of customer service. Or I think a lot of times the mentality here has been, we're a tourist city, tourists come and go. We don't need to cultivate. There's just not the mentality of cultivating a customer relationship. So a lot of times you will run into someone who's just very abrupt. But partly it's the culture. Partly it might've just been a couple of bad experiences. I would certainly not want anyone to stay away from Rome based on
that. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully some of the recommendations we go through today will help people who visit to see some of the nicer sides.
Oh, absolutely.
Of what's out
there.
Yeah.
I would definitely go back, and I definitely would want to spend more time there. Unfortunately, I'd only spent like 5 days in Rome, just because at the time with
that's
work.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's all I had. So I would love to check out more of the details and just eat my way more through the city, of course. It's absolutely phenomenal. With the food that we had was surprisingly just out of this world, like really good. So when the reputation of the Italians was at stake there for me, I think the food was really the redeeming factor, just so delicious. But
that's good.
But some of those cultural things too, and that was not necessarily like a fault with Rome. It could be just my misconceptions, just like I said, or maybe my expectations going in. I was expecting like a romantic, you know, scene of, you know, walking between ruins and beautiful buildings, and it does have those sections, but we were in a residential area. We rented an Airbnb, so we saw a different side. But also with just like I said, my expectations just weren't in the right place. So it was a little bit unrealistic. And this was me before traveling too much. So
that would make a difference, I think, too. You do get quite a good perspective once you've traveled a bit in terms of I think just not having necessarily too many expectations. I found that to be my experience. If I just don't go in with any, then I kind of allow the city to kind of present itself to me.
Correct.
You can take the good and the bad. It really depends. I've had the same type of experience that you had with Rome. I had in Barcelona, which was a real shame for me because I had heard so many good things about it. And it just rubbed me the wrong way for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned, the people, things like that. But I know it's a, there were also so many great things. So again, that's, I think that would be a place I would want to go back to as well, just to kind of revisit my, memory and revise. Give it another chance.
Well, that's good. I mean, granted, the things I said a second ago about Rome is, I would have to say, considerably worse for like New York City. And that's one of my favorite cities ever.
Exactly. You got to take the good with the bad, you know?
Yeah. But that's how all cities are. And like I said, this was, I was a novice. So I was unfortunately just had a different expectation at the time. But so just to get that out of the way. So I'm excited to talk more and to give Rome another shot for sure. So what makes Rome so special to you? And why is it a place that you've called home?
So I think partly it's kind of I wouldn't even say love hate relationship, but it's, I think the challenge of Rome has also been what I love so much about it, because there's something about Rome being such a tough city to like a tough nut to crack and to break into, in terms of it is difficult for a person living here to navigate. And there are a lot of things that aren't facilitated for you. You kind of have to work for things in terms of getting things done. But on the other hand, it gives you these amazing skills. Like I always tell people, if you can do Rome, you can do anywhere, because in order to get things done in this city, you have to really be persistent, and you have to be, even as a tourist, I would say, even somebody, let's say, for example, you're going to get a coffee. Some people are very put off by the fact that you may have to push your way up to the front. Now, not literally push people out of your way. However, Romans are not known for lining up. it's just one of these things. You know, Romans are not famous for their orderly behavior, especially when it comes to places like a coffee bar. So I think if you, you know, if you're uncomfortable in a situation, well, of course, post-COVID, everything's a little different now. People are a lot more respectful of personal space and things like that. But traditionally speaking, if you go into a coffee bar, part of the excitement of Rome is you do have to get out your sharp elbows and kind of, you know, weave your way up to the front and make yourself known and make your voice heard and be a little bit of assertive. And I think for me, that was really a nice thing to acquire, because maybe I wasn't quite as assertive before I moved here, but it gives you a certain sort of confidence. And there's also this sense of Rome. Rome stays Rome. It doesn't adapt to people who come in. The people who come in can kind of adapt to Rome. And I like that about Rome, because I haven't felt that necessarily anywhere else in Italy. As much as Florence has to offer, Florence has always given me a very touristy vibe. If I go there, I'm going to hear a lot of English. I'm going to feel in a mini sort of touristy world. And again, that might just be my own perception. But in Rome, you really can feel like a local. You can really get lost in the local culture. And there are places you can drop into where you won't hear English spoken. And I like that about it. So it's got that rough edge, but it's also so charming when you feel like you're a part of that. You feel like you're in such a sense of strong community fabric, people really, you know, living out in the world, you know, they're not all hiding in their houses. And when you get to meet Romans, they're so, I've found them to be so welcoming and so full of life and so open, as opposed to, this is of course generalizing, but other cities up north, for example, sometimes you might not find that openness to, or willingness to help people out if you ask. So that's been my experience. That's what I love about Rome. It just has such a personality, such a boisterous and joyful spirit.
I like cities that make you feel like you have to earn its respect a little bit. They just like, they won't just be like, oh, you're fine. Go ahead. Come on in. Hospitality is nice. But when you have to learn a little bit and adapt, just like you said, it doesn't change for people. You have to change for it, which is nice. And cities like that, I don't know. It makes it more of an adventure, I think.
Doesn't it? And doesn't it make you feel like you've earned your way in, you know, it gives you a sense of accomplishment, which, you know, it's nice, because you feel like, you know, you've kind of paid your dues, and like, you've earned being, you know, you made your way up to that coffee bar. It's an accomplishment as a tourist, you know, it's like, I earned this day. coffee.
Exactly.
They didn't hand it to me on a silver platter, and it's worth it. Once you get up to the coffee bar, you find that it was well worth it to kind of elbow your way up.
Yeah. Looking back on it now, I didn't have that mindset when I first went to Rome, and I really wish I had. And if I had had the perspective of, okay, let's just go along with this adventure and go along with all the antics that can kind of happen and the little, setbacks sometimes or pushes forward, it can be so much fun. And I think that makes for good stories.
Absolutely.
And like with Rome, I think more than any other European city, even now, I've been to quite a few. Even the drivers are very, very intense, and sometimes crossing the street can be a little intimidating, I thought as well.
Yeah. No, I feel like you have to like teach people how to cross the street. Yes. Here. My Italian teacher, who was from Rome, I remember her telling me, okay, this is how you cross the street. You're going to look at the car that's coming, and you're going to look at the driver in the eye, and you're going to show that driver with your eyes, I'm crossing right now. And you're going to walk out into the street. Yes. And at first, it's going to feel a little nerve-wracking. It kind of reminds me of that old video game Frogger.
Yeah.
You remember? I mean, maybe I'm dating myself, no, 1980s here. But, you know, you got to hop the little frog across the busy street. And that's kind of what it can feel like crossing the roads here. But once again, we go back to the sense of accomplishment. Hey, if you've just stared that driver down and that driver stopped for you, you just accomplished something.
Yes.
If you managed to make it to the other side without getting run over, congratulations. you are officially initiated into this city.
Yeah.
But I mean, joking aside, it's very true. And it's funny because the driving, people look at it from the outside and they see it as very aggressive. But I have to say, I find driving in the States way more aggressive than Rome, which people don't expect me to say. But here's the thing. People in Rome might get angry for a minute, and they shout and then they move on. It's not like they hold a grudge. They just realize we're all here. We're all crowded. You know, we're all going to have to get over it. Whereas there's not this sense of personal, this is my personal yes. space. Mm-hmm. You're in my, it's just kind of, we all kind of adapt to the fact that it's a big city and we move on. So I've found that in a way refreshing because people vent and then they move on. You don't have to worry about somebody following you or, you know, things like that, where somebody might be very offended uh-huh. that you cut them off. Here, everyone has to cut somebody else off eventually. So it's just a fact of life.
Yeah. I would take that over a vindictive road raged person in America, which is very common, I think, any day.
Yeah. So. I found that after living here and then going back, I had such different experiences driving. Granted, I must say, I probably had different habits after I went back to the States. I probably was cutting out closer in front of people than I normally would, only because it was just my Roman driving habit. So there again, you know, it's just knowing what culture you're in and what the norms are can be very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. And I think with the Roman crossing the street situation, and I remember someone telling me, like, no matter what, just keep walking and they will stop for you. Like, it's not like,
so true.
It's not
so true.
They're not going to like get close to you or anything. They will stop. But the thing is, you have to like,
you have to be assertive. You have to be the one to say, you will stop yes. for me now. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned when my mom came to visit, it was so funny. I felt like I had to be the mom for a second because we started to cross. And then God bless my mom. She started going backwards because she got scared. And I was like, no. That's the worst possible thing you can do because now you're confusing them. Now they don't understand what's happening. And you're actually more at risk because now you're kind of, you just got to, this is me. I'm going. Obviously, we're talking about we want a safe distance, and you have to look at the drivers in the eye. If the driver's not paying attention, don't dare step out. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure you're making eye contact and they see that you're coming. To this day, even this morning, crossing the road in my neighborhood, I literally had to stick my hand out like a traffic cop to a car. I mean, it's been 20 years, and to this day, I'm still, excuse me, I'm going right now. You will stop right now. Because if you don't, they won't. Because, you know, they're in a hurry. They don't want to stop for pedestrians. It's very different.
Yeah.
They figure, well, you're not taking the chance. I'll take it. That's the thing. Whoever's going to get there first.
Man, unique quirks from Rome for sure. I love talking about cities and those unique aspects because that's what makes it real. That's what makes it a real place and not just another random destination where you just kind of glide through, see a few sights, eat a few restaurants and just kind of move on. So it's good that it has a bit of that initiation.
absolutely.
We have to really wrap our arms around that as travelers. And I don't know. True. Just love it. You know, just love it the way it
so
is.
So true. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some other unique parts of Rome, whether it's like part of the history, because there's lots of it, or other aspects that travelers should know when they're visiting?
In terms of just in general, or are you looking at like food recommendations or just activities?
Just in general, because of course they have, I mean, we just talked about, you know, like crossing the street. Is there anything else that, I don't know, a traveler should know about their first time to Rome, anything about navigating through the city or just making sure that they have a good time, things that they should keep in mind? I know it's kind of vague, but.
So I think, again, a lot of it is expectations. So I think with Rome, if you are the type of person who is what they call like the very type A kind of a person, you do need to prepare your expectations, because this is a city that is not, that doesn't work on a precise schedule, so to speak. So I think preparing for that. So for example, if you're going to rely a lot on the public transportation, just be able to go with the flow, because the buses don't run on a very tight schedule. Gotcha. Here. You may see two buses show up at once, because who knows, maybe the drivers are friends and they had a coffee together and now they're one is following the other. It's not practical. It's not efficient, but it is what it is. So I think that kind of attitude can help you to kind of just, rather than, you know, complaining, oh my God, the city's so inefficient, da da da. It's like, that's part of the city's personality. So I think having a very flexible idea about the city can be helpful. One of the things that Romans always taught me was, there's two phrases they taught me. The first one was piano, piano. Piano means slowly. So they would say, it's kind of like little by little, anything that happens, okay, piano, piano, little by little, you'll get there. You know, just have that attitude. And the other one is a little bit more vulgar. So for anyone who speaks Italian out there, spoiler alert, bad word. But the other Roman maxim of advice is sticazzi, which means kind of F it. It's kind of like, yeah, if you can't do it little by little, then just forget about it. Don't worry about it. And generally, one of those will work in almost any situation you encounter in Rome.
Good to know.
Either take it in stride or just let it go. I mean, one way or the other, it's all going to work out fine. So I think, you know, having that kind of a mentality can be very helpful in terms of the city's culture, because there really are so many wonderful people here, restaurateurs, people who are running, you know, hospitality businesses who really do want to welcome tourists and show them that side of the city that's so welcoming.
Yeah. I mean, with, I guess, expectations, I am very type A, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Rome will knock that right out of you,
which is good.
And or you will leave kicking and screaming and saying, I will never come back, because that's the thing. It's either you adapt to it and kind of embrace it. I was too. I mean, before I came here, I was your number one type A personality, and it's been really healthy for me to kind of learn those, because it helps you to find balance.
Since going through like Southeast Asia and stuff like that, I have learned to be much more adaptable and much more go with the flow with those sort of things. And if Rome, I think, can challenge people in those sort of ways, then hey, you know, we got to pick up that Italian mindset to just do as the Romans do in that way and just go with it. I think that's
and doesn't that just leave you open to the unexpected? Yes. I mean, I've found so many times you can have these serendipitous kind of experiences just because it wasn't so tightly planned, or because maybe what you had planned didn't work out, but then it ended up being something different that might have never happened. So, exactly. You know, if you have that kind of a mentality, it can be a really fun adventure, like you said before, adventure.
Yeah, I kind of made this rule that if there's a mistake in the ordering process, especially when you're at any restaurant, abroad, and because there's always like the language barrier, or sometimes they don't know exactly what you want because you know, are pointing to one thing, but you're trying to say something else and they don't quite get it. If they bring you something extra or something different out, then just go with it. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
I fell in love with sparkling water in Croatia because I asked for still water and I hated sparkling water my entire life. Disgusting. And then they bring me out sparkling water. I'm like, no, I'm not going to give it back. I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to do it.
There you go.
Boom, I just fell in love. And it's strange. I just been drinking sparkling water ever since. So
who would have ever thought? Yeah. It's those kind of things that just are unexpected, but you say to yourself, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to try it. We'll see.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Worst case scenario, I continue hating sparkling water.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And it's those little surprises. And I have more stories like that too. But just anyone listening, that is a huge part of travel. There are these unexpected things. And that's where the beauty and the excitement really comes from, is when those happy accidents occur. You know, it's like taking something from Bob Ross. You know, he says you don't make mistakes, you just have happy accidents. So just kind of have that mindset, I think. So
it's so true. Being open to that. I was very intimidated when I first came to Italy because of being a perfectionist. I was afraid of making mistakes with the language. I was afraid of coming across the wrong way. I was just afraid of so many different things. And I think if there's a way to get, you know, to get past that and to put yourself out there, it's so enriching and yet so humbling at the same time, because it teaches us I always like to be prepared and, you know, for any situation. And it was so humbling to land here and feel like I didn't know how to say things perfectly at first. And yet that's where the magic is, because that's where you let down your guard and you can open to new experiences. That was my takeaway from when I first was learning Italian and first learning the city. I was afraid, really afraid. But once I got over that and just allowed it to kind of wash over me and say, you know what, I might say some ridiculous things and make big mistakes, and it's okay. It's all right. Nothing bad will happen.
And that's the truth of it. So yeah, if the bus is a little bit late, it's okay. We'll just go with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
for sure.
We're going to talk about food and fun things here in a second, but I'm always curious about places where maybe travelers should avoid, because there's always that touristy kind of section in every city where things are a little bit overpriced, food maybe not that good. And all in all, there might be a few hidden gems amongst that area, but sometimes for the most part, you should probably avoid it. So is there a place like that in Rome?
You know, I think it's easy. It's pretty easy to just with Rome to just kind of give general advice when it comes to answering this question, because I think generally speaking, you're going to want to avoid places that try to solicit you to come in. I think that happens quite a bit when you're by the big monuments. So for example, especially when you're down in the areas like by the Pantheon, down by the Trevi Fountain, down by the Spanish Steps, there are certain avenues that you're going to wander down that, you know, they look very charming to a tourist perhaps, but if you're looking for an authentic meal or an authentic experience, if there's somebody there beckoning you in, trying to get you in, if their menus have a lot of pictures on them, those are touristy places, generally speaking. And like you said, you may find the odd gem. And you know, by all means, you may even enjoy a touristy place. There's nothing inherently bad about it. It's just that if you're looking for a more authentic experience, you're probably going to want to avoid those kind of places, really close to the tourist throngs, perhaps, and maybe just seek out places that people have recommended.
Yeah, very good advice. Generally speaking, that's where I follow rules for just about anywhere. If they are trying to get me to come in the restaurant, I most likely won't go unless I'm like super hungry and I have no choice.
Exactly. It's a convenience thing. Exactly. And then for like the places like the food trucks you're going to see out in front of the monuments, I would stick to bottled drinks there, only because it's generally speaking, but if it's a convenience thing, then, you know, stick to convenience foods.
Yeah.
Like a bottle of water, because you just can't. Another tip though, with the bottles of water, and I don't know if everybody knows this about Rome, but we do have there's fountains all around the city. You probably saw when you were here. They run continuously. They're called Nazoni, which is like they call it like the big nose, because it's got a little spigot. They're like little mini towers about knee high. And then they have a little spigot coming out, and it's constantly drawing water up from the underground springs. It's very cold and it runs continuously. So all you have to do is either put your bottle under it, or if you're very local, you'll stick your finger and block the tube, and there's a little tiny hole in the spigot, and it will shoot out like a little arc up, and people will use that like a drinking fountain.
Oh,
in times of COVID, I'm not sure I would recommend that. However, it is possible. It is possible. But if you want to refill your water bottle, you don't even need to buy water bottles from the overpriced tourist places. You can simply refill, and it comes out really cold, and it's completely drinkable. I know a lot of times people in new cities might think, well, I see this little fountain, can I actually drink that water? In Rome, you can.
Boom.
You absolutely can. It's a good way to save money.
Yeah. Water adds up. So if there's a way to save money that on something simple, I will take it.
For sure. And the water in Rome is fantastic. I mean, the kind of water you're going to drink out of the fountains here is spring water. So,
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I've seen people do it just like you said, the big arch, you know, that, and they just kind of just, you know, put their mouth down. It's really fun to see. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I wasn't up for that. So I didn't try it. And now I'm like,
yeah, you don't have to be, but you can still fill your bottle. You just the standard old refill and you won't get wet or splashed.
I have a question about restaurants and reservations sometimes too, because a few times if there wasn't a way to get a reservation at a place or even just like a normal trattoria, is that how you pronounce it? Trattoria? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
In neighborhoods, nothing fancy and not even very famous places. I'd go right when they would open because I'm not too sure about reservations or anything. I want to make sure that I can, you know, get in and eat and stuff like that. So a couple times I was turned away. They said, no, we're full. And they were not full. They literally just opened up for dinner service. So I'm not sure if they had like a reservation system or maybe towards us, they just didn't want tourists coming into like their local neighborhood restaurants. I am not sure.
That's unusual. Yeah, no, I wouldn't think that they wouldn't want tourists in their restaurants. Actually, I would, in my experience, it would be that they would be happy to welcome you in. My gut level feeling, not knowing the exact restaurant or the exact situation, would be that they were fully booked. Were these places that you had found on like a guide or recommendation that were pretty well known, or?
I'm trying to think back now. Generally, I find things off of like blogs or on Google combined and try to cross reference things. So I have a list. Like
because if they were places that are well known, then it's very likely that they were booked.
Okay.
I mean, I have a favorite little neighborhood trattoria in Testaccio that I have loved for like the past, well, pretty much the past 20 years. And it's really hard to get in there. And they don't really take reservations, but they fill up really quick. So it kind of varies from place to place.
Okay.
I think the idea of going early though is a good one if you're a tourist, because Romans tend to eat dinner around 8:30. Even 9, sometimes not quite as late as Spain, but 8:30 is generally dinner time. Going before that can be a good tip because you're more likely to, sometimes they'll make an exception if they have bookings. They'll say, well, if you can move on by, I don't know, 8:00, we can serve you now, that kind of thing. You might be able to squeeze in between 7 and 8. And conversely, it can also be after. Usually they'll have two shifts. They'll have like a first dinner shift and a second dinner shift. If you can squeeze in after the second, sometimes they can squeeze you in if they're booked. So it really depends.
Yeah. And that does happen like that exactly, you know, what you mentioned where, hey, yeah, we're booked, but if you can eat and leave in about an hour, hour and a half, yeah, you're more than welcome to come in. I'm like, okay, yeah, no problem. So. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting to hear. So I was just curious if that was a common thing or maybe it's just, I did something wrong too.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I would find them to be generally pretty honest. I haven't found a whole lot of, restaurants being actually quote unquote, like prejudice against tourists. On the contrary, actually, a lot of these restaurants depend on, visitors for a lot of their, you know, especially downtown, because a lot of the people who live in Rome maybe don't necessarily live right downtown. So, you know, a lot of those places are going to definitely count on visitors for their livelihoods. So they would be more than happy to welcome you if they can find a spot.
Well, good to know. I have to give it a second shot when I go back. Well, now for sure. Let's move on to food here. The most exciting part of the interview, of course. What are the... a few traditional foods that people should definitely try when they're coming to Rome.
Okay. So one of the things, so Rome has some great street food. First off, you'll often see people walking around eating things. It's not bad manners here with certain foods. So I don't know if when you were here, did you try a souffle?
Yes, I did. And it was fantastic. Yeah. It was my favorite things that I had there.
Yeah. I mean, who can not love a fried rice ball with a cheese in the middle, mozzarella cheese melted in the middle? I mean, it's the perfect creation. So it's like a little rice ball with like meat sauce. So imagine rice with meat sauce formed into like a kind of an oblong, I don't know, shape. It's not necessarily a ball shape, but kind of an oval shape. And a little bit of mozzarella in the middle. And then it's breaded on the outside and deep fried. So this is a great snack. This is something you can eat and go. It's called a supplì, and it goes with pizza. So where you're going to find it is at places that serve pizza generally. Because in Rome, we have a tradition of eating fritti, which is like fried foods, as appetizers before we eat pizza. So you can eat that as a snack, or in a pizza restaurant, you can order it as an antipasto. So like an appetizer before you get your pizza. So supplì is definitely very Roman. You won't find it. In fact, it's funny. My kids will go to other places in Italy. They'll go, okay, we want a supplì. And we're like, yeah, no, they don't have supplì in this town because this isn't Rome. There's other types of similar things. So you might find arancino is a Sicily kind of version. It looks like a pyramid, but it's not the same. It's different. But a supplì is very Roman. Another thing is the pizza al taglio. I don't know if it's necessarily only in Rome, but it's definitely a nice street food. One of my friends, when she came to visit, called it scissor pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see them cutting it like that?
And they do it by weight and everything and a lot of places.
Exactly. So
really
that's
cool.
One thing to understand. Yeah. You can stop into these pizza shops where you'll see the pizza is already prepared. It's like big, giant rectangles, lots of different toppings. And you can point, if you don't speak the language too well, kind of point to the one you want. And the person behind the counter will kind of gesture as to how much do you want, this much, that much. And then you tell them how much. And then, yeah, they'll put it on a scale and you'll pay by the weight and they'll cut it into squares. And you can get that to eat. Sometimes they'll say, do you want to just eat it on the go? And they'll wrap it for you in a piece of like half paper and you can hold it like that and just eat it on the go. So that's another good snack if you're on the go.
Yeah.
A typical Roman.
Surprisingly, my favorite pizza that I had was just the like crust and with sauce on it. No cheese, no toppings. That was probably one of my favorite things.
Okay, right. So that would be like pizza rossa. In fact, another thing that people should definitely try, and of course we'll get all the names of these places like in your show notes, but there's a place that serves what's called pizza bianca. So another thing is just delicious, just plain white bread, but they call it pizza. And what you're describing is pizza rossa. So it would be like this white bread with just the red sauce on top.
Okay.
But a really famous place to get pizza bianca downtown is a bakery called Roscioli. And it's one of the best places to get pizza bianca downtown. And it would just be a snack. You could just stop in and get a couple of squares and have it as a snack as you're walking around. It's just that combination of like crispy outside, fluffy bread inside, a little bit of olive oil, some salt, and it's just magic. Just those simple ingredients, fresh, warm out of the oven. I mean, it's a winner.
Yeah, I would challenge people to try that and not go for all the toppings and, you know, drenched in cheese and stuff like that, to try a few of those. It may seem plain, but it really is. It's something special, and it just tastes, I guess, refreshing, not very heavy. So in fact, the way I describe foods like this, it kind of invigorates the palate. It's like, I'm ready to eat more after it.
Absolutely.
Your palate's just like primed, you know? So it's fun. I like it.
Something Italians have just told me time and time again about the Mediterranean diet and about the way they eat here is if the food, the base food is fantastic, fresh ingredients, you know, if it's quality food that you're putting on the plate, you don't need to cover it with a lot of things. A lot of questions I get from Italians as an American, they say, why do you put so many sauces and so many toppings and so many things? And, you know, they say, if you have a fantastic steak, all you need is a little olive oil and some sea salt. Like, you don't need anything else. And if the steak holds its weight on its own, don't cover it. Don't put more on top of it. And so I think that can be a good rule of thumb here. Simple is better because it's good. It's just the good basic ingredients are going to carry that dish. You don't need to hide it.
I totally agree. Like, I hate when people ask for like steak sauce. I'm like, no, what are you doing? Especially at like a very delicious, amazing steak restaurant. Like, what are you doing? Exactly. Please don't murder this.
Exactly. Don't cover it. So you can really savor the steak itself. Another pasta dish that's typical to Rome is called amatriciana. And it comes from the town of Amatrice, which isn't too far from here. And so amatriciana is just a very basic dish. It has simple ingredients. It has tomato sauce, and it has a sort of bacon that, in fact, Romans will debate you on this. They'll say that a real amatriciana has to have guanciale, which is like the cheek, like the, I don't know, the jowl cheek part of the, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's kind of a fattier, the fattier part of the bacon. Others will say pancetta, which is another part. Regardless, it's a bacon. It's a bacon, not bits, but like chopped up, kind of diced. But not like your crispy bacon bits. It's actual like the meat itself chopped into like diced cubes. And no garlic. They don't add anything else. A little bit of chili pepper. And that's it. That's all it is. And it's a very typical dish here.
My mouth is like
carbonara is another one. Geez. Sorry,
my mouth is like watering. Just like talking about this, like this sounds so good.
No, and the pasta has to be al dente. I think anyone who comes to Italy and eats pasta needs to understand that it's not going to be squishy. It's not going to be Italians who go abroad. They have a real issue with the pasta because what I've learned is restaurants abroad. Let's say the United States, for example, because they serve so many things on their menus, their pasta is pre-cooked. So they're going to cook it halfway. And then when you order it, they're going to dip it again in the boiling water to warm it up and serve it to you. And it's going to come out, you know, squishy, overcooked. Here, the restaurants are equipped with boilers. They call them bollitori. So when you order your pasta, they put the pasta down. It's not pre-cooked. So they can time it so that it's not overcooked. And al dente means it's going to have a bite to it. It's going to have, you're going to, like, if you were to look inside when you were to bite like a piece of tube pasta, like a penne pasta, inside you might even see a little white line because it might be just slightly still not 100% cooked in the middle because they want that consistency to it because it adds something to the dish. So that's really important too. I think people who eat pasta here might definitely see that as a difference. It's an important consideration for when you're evaluating a dish here. If it's overcooked, it's not good.
That's actually really important to understand. Even, you know, living in different spots around here, I've been in Europe now for 3 months, and we've just been going to a bunch of different destinations on this one trip. It's funny because the pasta here, we will just get like spaghetti in every single place, nothing fancy, just whatever, you know, pasta company makes it. They have two different times to cook it. You know, they have an al dente, and then they have like, I don't even know the other word in languages, but a longer time so that it's like a little more squishy, depending on what you like.
Exactly.
And I'm like, exactly. I like that. Okay. They know what al dente is, and it should have a little tooth. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So carbonara is another dish here in Rome. Yeah. And then a thing that I think people don't understand about carbonara a lot of times is they think there's some sort of cream sauce in it. No, and there's not at all. Yes. It's egg. It's just simply, it's very tricky to make a good carbonara because the carbonara has the bacon. It's like the amatriciana, but it has a bacon and egg. And the thing about the egg is if you don't time it right, the egg will like cook, you know, in the pasta because it gets added at the very end. The raw egg gets mixed into the pasta at the very end after the pasta's cooked. So if you don't time it right, the egg gets cooked and if you don't do it the right way. So if you do it the right way, it has a creamy consistency, the egg. It doesn't come out like fried egg. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when it's done right, people get so confused because the way that the chef can do it to make it such a creamy sauce, it almost seems like they added something. They added a cream to it. No, that's the way they've worked the egg into the dish. And it fools you. And so it's, again, very simple. There's nothing added. It's simply beaten eggs that they toss into the cooked pasta with the bacon. So
yeah.
And pepper.
Yeah. Carbonara was life changing. Like it really was an eye opening experience.
When it's done right, yeah. It's surprising. It's truly surprising in a great way.
Well, especially since it's such a limited amount of ingredients going into this. And that's why I was excited. It's one of the first things I tried was carbonara. And goodness, I couldn't get enough. And we went to, you know, three different places that I think specialized in it or at least had a good version of it. And really, really, really amazing. And ever since then, I know my wife has tried to get carbonara in the States. I'm like, don't do it, honey. Like, it's not going to be the same. And then it comes out.
You can't go back. That's right.
it's tough because it came out in like a cream sauce. So you're like, oh, this isn't carbonara.
They very well may have added cream because a lot of places don't necessarily have the skill because it takes skill to do that. And so if they don't have the skill, then they're going to, again, they're going to add something extra. If you have the skill and the quality ingredients, you don't need to add extra. It's very, you can have a really satisfying dish with just a few simple ingredients.
Yeah. And cacio e pepe was the other pasta dish that I just fell in love with
too. Oh, good one. Sure. Like, yeah. And so that's just Parmesan cheese and pepper.
Yep. Yep.
Again, perfect example of simple ingredients elevated, you know, with the right skill, the pasta al dente, the right kind of cheese. Yeah, it's surprising how delicious it can be with such simple ingredients. That's the majesty of the Mediterranean diet and Rome in particular, too, because as you travel further north, the dishes get heavier because it's colder. So, you know, from Rome down, we have a very light kind of Mediterranean diet because the weather gets so warm. We wouldn't have a lot of heavy cream based dishes here. Butter, you find a lot of dishes with butter up north. Here, it's very much olive oil.
Yes.
Rarely find butter in our dishes here. And from Rome down, I would say.
Name just one or two then very specific restaurants just on the hit list you shouldn't miss, or you are going to be so disappointed that you found out about this later if you don't do this in Rome. Like, I want to know the very best.
Well, I mean, one of the ones that I like was the one I mentioned, the Trattoria in Trastevere. So Trastevere is a neighborhood just south of the center on the other side of the Tiber River. It's a great neighborhood for nightlife. It's also a great neighborhood for a lot of different restaurants. One that I've loved for a long time, I don't know if it's on the top list or whatever, but it's called Da Enzo, which would be like Enzo's place. It's a little hole in the wall. And it's fantastic for those pasta dishes that we were just talking about. They really do a solid Roman pasta. So if you want to really taste that kind of pasta the way it's supposed to taste, that would be my recommendation. It's one of those places that can be hard to get in terms of booking a reservation. So again, you might want to try going a little early, or possibly you go a day in advance and you book for the next day, that kind of thing. Cause they, you know, they don't take reservations, but you can maybe stop by and see, ask them like, when is the best time for us to come by? I think they'll be accommodating. So it really depends. It says here, I'm looking on their website. It says bookings for 7:30 PM are accepted. So again, maybe that's catering to visitors because they're not so busy.
Perfect. Very, very good to know. Especially if you can still get the good food and not have to throw off like your timetable for eating, you know, not have to eat super late, which is nice.
Exactly. Another Roman, a really typical Roman type of food that tourists should definitely try is the Jewish cooking. So there's a whole branch of Roman cuisine that's Roman Jewish. And we have a neighborhood in the city that's called the Jewish Ghetto, which is the area where the synagogue is located. And in that area, you're going to find a lot of restaurants that specialize in this particular type of food. And one of the really unique things to try is an artichoke. They do artichokes in two different ways. And one of the ways that I really like is called carciofo alla Giudea. It's fried. It's a fried artichoke. It comes out so crispy and light. You can just pick off the petals like chips. And it's so good. And there's a place in the Jewish neighborhood called Nonna Betta that does a really good job of making that. And so I would recommend that tourists, definitely travelers, check that place out because that's one of their specialties.
That was one of the foods we regret not trying in Rome was that fried artichoke. It looks fabulous. And if you're going in the right season too, you just see people just like cutting the artichokes on the street, you know, like trimming them up for the restaurants and stuff. And
exactly.
It's beautiful and they're quick.
Yeah.
It's like a masterful
art. It's really special. Yeah. And then for the supplì, I think a place that's very unique is called Trapizzino. They have a couple of different branches in Rome. One of the closest to downtown is in Testaccio, the Testaccio neighborhood, which is also another really unique neighborhood to venture into. But they do really good supplì. They've also kind of innovated on the supplì. So you'll find supplì, the basic Roman supplì, but you'll also find innovation. So for example, they do a supplì that's a cacio and pepe supplì. So the dish that you were just talking about, the pasta dish, they've kind of converted that into a supplì form. So you've kind of married two of your Roman specialties into one.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fun place. Porchetta, they have a supplì with porchetta as well. Porchetta is another specialty from the Roman Castelli Romani, just outside of Rome. So it's the whole roast pig.
Yes. Yeah. So people who don't know, porchetta is like, it was like one of my favorite things like ever. It's basically just like,
so good.
Like pork belly wrapped around the pork loin generally, and then stuffed with like spices and stuff. And then
that's
roasted,
right.
And the skin's all crispy. And oh, it was.
It's so good. And they eat that as a sandwich. And the bread in Rome is quite good. They have a couple of really neat rolls that are special to Rome, like the rosetta. And they'll put the rosetta is like a bun, like a roll, like a bread roll that's hollow inside. So they can open it and then you can put all the porchetta inside and make a fantastic sandwich.
Oh, man, that made my day right there. Just thinking back on my porchetta eating experiences in Rome, like, oh my goodness, that really was good. And there was one place, I can't remember where, but they were really nice because they saw like a camera. I was trying to take a picture of like the whole porchetta like behind the counter, and they invited us back there. I'm like, hey, go ahead, come back here, take a picture, take a video. I'm like, oh
that's nice.
Yes.
And it's that's nice.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Like so delicious. Yeah. So delicious.
Yeah. Okay. It's really something. Yeah, that's definitely something that people should try.
All right. Well, then let's end out on maybe just a favorite memory, whether it's a food experience or something else that happened to you that stands out from your time there.
Coffee is special in Rome. And a really mind-blowing experience that I had with coffee that was very unexpected that comes to mind as something that was one of these great memories, aha moments. When I worked with the students at the University of California, a lot of times they would give me tips because they were the ones who were out in the city trying new things. And a student came to me once and said, have you tried the Cafe Completo at the bar that's just around the corner here? And I said, the Cafe Completo, that's like the complete coffee. What does that even mean? And they're like, we don't know. It's just amazing and you need to try it. I said, okay, I'll do that. So when you say cafe here in Rome, it means espresso. If they ask you, do you want a coffee, a cafe, you're going to get an espresso. They don't actually order. You wouldn't actually order an espresso. You would just say a cafe because they just know that's espresso here. So this Cafe Completo is an espresso coffee. And then in the very bottom of it, they put a cremino, which is this really unique chocolate. It's a square chocolate. It's made of gianduja, I think, which is a really unique. It comes from up north. Anyway, they put this square chocolate in the bottom of the espresso cup. Then they pour the espresso on top. And it melts when the espresso gets poured on top of it. And if I'm remembering correctly, they may even put some sort of whipped cream or foamed milk on top. It's been several years, but it was the cremino that did it for. And I asked the guy, I ordered the Cafe Completo, not knowing what it was. And I said, what's the secret? And he showed me. He said, we put this inside. And the Cafe Completo, the only place I've ever found it is at this one bar down by Largo Argentina, which is famous for the cat. There's a cat sanctuary. And it's also a place where Julius Caesar was actually assassinated because the forum was not meeting at the forum that day. They were meeting slightly away from there. And it's this place called Largo Argentina. So the bar is called Cafe con tre F. The coffee with three F's. So if you see coffee, cafe with the three F's, they serve it there. And it's delicious. And it's not one of the bars that people always talk about. A lot of times you'll hear Cafe Sant'Eustachio and Tazzadoro are the two like reigning champions of espresso downtown. But I would recommend this place. It's still downtown and it's special. So that's a great memory, that coffee. The first time I tried that, I was like, oh, this is something different.
Wow, that sounds so delicious. I'm really excited to try it for myself. That would put a great note on a coffee experience in Rome and something unique that you really can't find elsewhere. So I am happy that you had that experience and sharing with all the listeners so they can try it for themselves too. So
for sure. Absolutely.
All right. I think that is our time here today. Lots of delicious things. I wish we had more time to talk all about the food. I know we could talk about food for hours and hours and hours in Rome.
Maybe after you, when you come and visit, we'll do a live session.
That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect.
And we'll revise your Rome food memories. Yes. and add some new ones. That would be part two.
I think so. Okay, perfect. So do you have like an Instagram or anything that people can follow you on or...
Yeah. So right now, the best place to stay in touch with Italy and to if you are a traveler planning to come to Italy, would be to join the community that I manage. So it's called Italia Pass. So you can go to italiapass.com and you can join the community there. It's Italia Pass, PASS.com. And that's a great, it's free to join and lots of experts there, local experts and other Italy travelers who can answer your questions and share information about food and travel all over Italy.
Isn't there just so many different varieties of food and must eat things in Rome? It's exciting to hear all the different amazing dishes that await all those hungry foodists that decide to take their trip over to Rome and take their eating seriously. I'm really happy that Shelley could share her expertise and her real passion for that food. I mean, you can just hear like she loves it. And I'm just happy that she had found a home there and just let that city really be part of her life, especially when she adapted to that culture. And I don't want the things that we discussed today to be off-putting to you. Every city has its own unique way of doing things. And we have to keep that in mind. We have to understand that cities can not be what we expect, but can be surprising in other areas as well. Now, I know we didn't go over that many specific restaurants, but Shelley is sending over amazing list of delicious places to eat, as well as the ones we talked about today. So if you're considering Rome in any way, shape, or form, please go to the show notes of the page. Go to nomadicfoodist.com/Rome. That's nomadicfoodist.com/Rome for the full list that Shelley is going to give us. So when you're planning, you can eat at all the places from someone who's been living there for over 20 years and, of course, has an amazing palate for food. If you liked this episode, please hit the subscribe button so every single week you get a brand new episode waiting for you with amazing interviews and delicious destinations. I really appreciate you listening, and remember, eat with an adventurous heart no matter where you go.